Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. I got an email from my Alaska bureau. Hey, Doug, did you see that about half the Chicago police are about to walk off the job or get fired? There'll never be a better time for a bank job in Chicago. Come on, buddy. Help me out. I just need someone to drive the car. Says my... So anyway, the bank job is probably off the table. And we hope that sensible minds are going to prevail and that this vaccine mandate catastrophe is not going to actually occur. But who knows anymore? I mean, you can't really predict... I mean, when the governing officials look at collapsing society through just not giving in on their insistence and then firing at 20%, 10%, 30%, 50% of various industries and the Navy SEALs, I mean, who knows? I mean, if you don't give in and just say, okay, well, wait a minute, maybe the damage is going to be too great. Maybe we need to find another way. But I don't even know if they're willing to consider finding another way. Because everyone's insane. Everyone's insane. Listen to this. This is from the Cancel This file. Cancel This. Republican North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Democrats are calling for his resignation. And if I'm not surprised that there aren't Republicans calling for his resignation. Because he touched the third rail of sexual immorality. If you don't worship sexual immorality and promote it actively, all Democrats and most Republicans think you're some kind of bigot. And that's what they think of Republican North Carolina Governor Mark Robinson. They think he's a bigot. They're calling for his resignation because at a church, he gave a lecture. Here's what he said. In regards to transgender pronouns and whatnot and all the woke hysteria around sexual perversion that everybody's worshiping, he said there's no reason anybody anywhere in America should be telling any child about transgenderism, homosexuality, or any of that filth. F-I-L-T-H, filth. He used the word. And he said, yes, I called it filth. And if you don't like that I called it filth, come and see me, I'll explain it to you. As if to say, I'll either punch you in the mouth or I'll explain it to you. Either way, I'm open. I like this guy. I like him a lot. Anyway, the Deputy White House Press Secretary for the Hyde-Barris administration calls his comments repugnant and offensive. And then she went and hid under her desk because she was afraid that a real man had maybe entered the room. Other Democrats that I won't mention because they're not worthy of mentioning are calling on Robinson to resign. They call him, it's a disgrace and he's an embarrassment to our fine state, says one of the House eunuchs from the North Carolina Senate, State House, whatever. Well, he was asked what he thinks about all these calls for his resignation. And so he posted up on Facebook over the weekend. I will not be silenced, said this heterosexual male, a Christian heterosexual male. In fact, I'm just going to assume that this guy's a Christian. I don't think any other assumption could be made because only a Christian would be only a person dedicated to the gospel of Jesus Christ would be willing to sacrifice his political career like this fella is doing. And I applaud him for it. He said, I will not be silenced. I will fight for the rights of our children to receive an education free from sexual concepts that do not belong in the classroom. Well, you know, I like the first statement better. I liked it when he called it filth. It was a little stronger. It's almost as if I hate to see a good man pushed into backing down by the maniacal, devious, deviant, perverted left. But already he seems to be softening because here's the thing, Lieutenant Governor Robinson, I like you. I think you're a fine person. I appreciate your stand. But these sexual concepts, not only do they not belong in the classroom in front of our children, these should be illegal and criminal to teach people these things. To teach people about transgenderism and homosexuality, that these are legitimate alternative lifestyle choices, that is criminal and it should be illegal. And Mr. Robinson, if you're willing to risk your political career, because these days, if you just don't drop to your knees and worship the perverts, you're going to be drummed out of office. So you might as well go all the way. Go all the way the same distance that Jesus would go and say this is criminal and it's illegal. And that's all. And the consequences for you, Mr. Robinson, will be the same. You'll be drummed out of the insane, twisted, perverted, sex pervert, communist government in which you're involved right now. And then you'll be spit out the bottom of all of that. But maybe you'll retain enough of your wisdom and credibility that you might be able to pick up the mantle for whatever comes next after the Chinese are done with us or whatever happens. All right. Do I want to do Kristi Noem? I'm going to put her at the bottom of the stack. Whatever. I don't care about Donald Trump and... We saved 2 million lives. We saved 2 million lives. I saw him interviewed with, I forget who it was. It was Sean Hannity or someone of his ilk. Relatively untalented, just sleepwalking through a career, parroting and whatever, reading the script, reading the teleprompter. It was one of those. It was either Hannity or Hannity-like. And Trump said that through his lockdowns and his spastic, cowardly response to the germs and his rushed experimental abortion-tainted vaccines, Trump was sad. We saved 2 million lives. Because remember the psycho British nut job who had the model that said millions of people were going to die? Millions of people would die in America. Remember the models that turned out to be fake and phony? Well, Trump was allowed to quote it, right, with this allegedly concern, and he just nodded along. Yeah, you saved 2 million lives. You're great. You're going to make America great again. Donald Trump will go down as the man who lost America because he was relatively dim-witted. Good at building buildings in New York City, greasing the right officials, bribing the right people. But as a leader of the last bastion of morality and liberty on the planet, he was not qualified. And so now we've been turned over to the voodoo maniacs. Yes, we go into the voodoo jihad file. 17 Christian missionaries have been abducted in Haiti. We have listen to this spokesperson. Huh? Spokesperson for the U.S. State Department said the welfare and safety of U.S. citizens abroad is one of the highest priorities of this Department of State. We are aware of these reports and have nothing additional to offer at this time. Really? Unquote, I'm sorry. Really? You have nothing additional to offer? Because normally when Americans are kidnapped in a foreign country, the State Department at least says our thoughts and prayers are with the family. We're making every effort. You know, they at least give lip service to the idea that they care. Oh, these are Christian missionaries. They don't even take the time to act like they care anymore. The State Department would actively be killing Christians if they could get away with it. They would be putting them on trial and killing them right at the Washington Monument if they could get away with it. So don't expect them to care that a family, including a bunch of children, Christian missionaries, have been kidnapped in Haiti. They don't. All right. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller, quick report, he's not going to jail, unfortunately. He tried his best. But when you're up against the just a system, even in the military, it's hard to actually go to jail. So he was only locked up for a few days, barely time to read a short C.S. Lewis book, let alone what we needed from Mr. Scheller. But anyway, he pled guilty to all charges. And then the judge pretty much gave him a slap on the wrist and told him, don't do that again. But the more important issue is the nature of Scheller's departure from the military. Will it be honorable or dishonorable? And I can't recall if officers are even involved in that. I'll have to do my research. I apologize. I came to the show unprepared. But I know that if you're an enlisted person, then you're discharged from the military, and it can be honorable or dishonorable. But if I'm not mistaken, that's not the way it works with officers. They can just resign and leave. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. Anyway, the folks at taskandpurpose.com who seem to know about the military, they say that the nature of Scheller's discharge will be determined by the Navy Secretary. I didn't know officers were discharged. I will have to look into this. Anyway, the judge gave Scheller basically $5,000 fine and told him, we're going to put a nasty letter in your, a letter of reprimand in your, that'll affect your military career that you're voluntarily ending. So anyway, that was, I wish the judge would have thrown the book at him and locked him up for 5 years. And Scheller could have been conditioned mentally for what we need, which is a lieutenant colonel to save America. Anyway, meanwhile, from the widespread insanity file, we go out to California where Gavin Newsom thinks he has the authority to tell toy stores how to set up their aisles. And oddly enough, people at the toy stores seem to think he has that authority too, which is really weird. Right? I mean, when would it ever have crossed anyone's mind that the governor of any state could dictate to a store how they lay out their aisles in a retail store? Does that not strike anyone else as patently insane? Apparently not. In California now, toy stores will be required. How? I'm not sure. They're going to be required to have gender-neutral sections in the store. And the reporters over at the Daily Wire, they report that it's unclear how the stores are going to satisfy what the legislation, I don't know what you would call this. I mean, you can't call this a law. I mean, that would be to insult the idea of a law. But apparently stores, they're not sure how they're going to satisfy the reasonable selection requirements that are scheduled to go into effect in 2024. How about this? How about we all just ignore this insanity come 2024 and we just act as if it's 2024 and we're all not crazy? No, we're not going to be able to do that. We're going to actually, because let's see, Gavin Newsom, by 2024, January of 2024, he'll be running for president. And so we're going to be expected to take him even more seriously than we do now, which is crazy. Yeah, in fact, let's go deeper into the widespread tyranny file. Well, no, that was the widespread insanity file because, I mean, that's just insane. But this is straight up tyranny. Gavin Newsom is banning chainsaws and lawnmowers in California. Let's see here. He signed a law to limit pollution, and it's expected to affect 50,000 small businesses, landscape businesses in California. But don't worry about that. California's budget's going to include $30 million to help professional landscapers and gardeners. Uh-huh. How come the landscapers and gardeners have never asked the government for help before? That's because the government doesn't know anything about landscaping. It doesn't know anything about gardening. They're not going to be any help. They don't want to help. They don't want to help you transition to clean alternative fuel weed whackers. No, they want to co-opt, socialize, and communize the landscapers and the gardeners by taking them over. basically push the landscapers and the gardeners into a corner, tell them they have to go all electric, and then step in and help. We just want to help those not capable of bearing the full financial burden. Here's a check. Give us your life. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's getting a little ahead of the game there. Hey, Gavin Newsom cares a lot, huh? He wants to help. Listen to how this is written, by the way. The new rule goes into effect January 2024, or as soon as it is determined to be feasible. Okay, so it's not feasible to eliminate gas-powered weed whackers, leaf blowers, hedge trimmers, lawnmowers, and chainsaws. It's never feasible. You're crazy. Gavin Newsom should be thrown into the sea. But the California Air Resources Board is working on how they're going to execute the law, which I appreciate them using that language. They say it's going to be a lengthy process. It's going to be a lengthy process to implement the regulations that will employ thousands, maybe tens of thousands of our otherwise unemployable, unskilled family members, mistresses, and other various donors and associates of the crime family currently running the state of California. They'll all be employed, figuring out how to execute gardeners and landscapers. No, we didn't mean execute the landscapers and the gardeners. Sorry about that. We just want to execute the law that will destroy their business, their livelihoods. That's right. Gavin Newsom says he wants California run exclusively on green energy by 2045. What does that mean? It means Gavin Newsom is a maniac and should be, he should be arrested. No. All cars in California are to be zero emission by 2035. Come hell or high water, he doesn't care. Well, what if that destroys everything, Gavin? That's okay. He'll pick up the pieces and feather his nest. And all right, we go from there into the American Anarchy file. The New York Post reports that Walgreens is closing 5 more stores in San Francisco because, well, they're empty. Because shoplifting. Shoplifting has basically been legalized. And so Walgreens can't keep up with the shoplifters. So the geniuses passed a law in California that you could steal up to $950 worth of stuff. And it would be a misdemeanor. Because why? Though they wanted to be nice. And so little did they realize that criminals would organize gangs to steal $949 worth of stuff every chance they get. And before long, you have an organized retail crime wave that's so significant that it's going to put Walgreens out of business. Nobody could ever think Walgreens could ever be put out of business. How could a company that satisfies the insatiable appetite for drugs in America, how could that ever go out of business? What a perfect business model. Walgreens, hey, let's sell drugs to Americans. There's no way we could ever go out of business. Oh, yeah, you want to bet? Give the leftist politicians an opportunity. They could even put the drugstore out of business. So anyway, the organized retail gangs who've outsmarted the nice, kind, caring, compassionate politicians who just want to, I don't know what they want to do. They want to legalize crime. I for what was the purpose? I'm not sure. I think it's to ameliorate their own guilt over the fact that they are criminals. The people in the government feel guilty about punishing criminals and enforcing the law because they're criminals and they're breaking the law every day and they feel guilty about it. How can we put a guy in jail for shoplifting when I'm pillaging the grandchildren of my constituents? I'm pillaging them and leaving them destitute every day. So how can I arrest Charlie for shoplifting a pack of gum at Walgreens? And in the end, when you have the when you have criminals in the government enforcing criminal laws, they end up legalizing crime. And that's where we are. Let's see. Walgreens, a spokesperson, Phil, there's that extra syllable that's unneeded. It could be spokesman, but no, we'll just leave that aside. Walgreens spokesman Phil says retail theft has increased dramatically, and to help combat the issue, we've increased our investment in security. They've had to increase their investment in security 46 times the average cost of a chain, say, in Des Moines, Iowa. Walgreens spends X dollars on security. Well, in San Francisco, it's 46 times higher. And the stores are still empty and they're having to close them. Ladies and gentlemen, security should not be considered an investment. Security is not an investment. In fact, every penny that Walgreens spends on security cameras and security guards and whatever, shotguns, what are they going to have, armed guards in front of the store before long? It'd be like Guatemala, for crying out loud. Anyway, every penny that they spend on that stuff should be an expense submitted to the government for reimbursement. And eventually, if the government were doing its job properly, Walgreens' investment in security would drop to zero, because everyone would be afraid to rob Walgreens because there would be actual punishment for the crime of stealing. So some Republicans probably going to pick up on this idea. Raise the tax?
Yeah, the income tax from regular people. If the government have to reimburse it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, yeah, this schema will never work. If the government had to reimburse businesses for their failures, they would just tax the rest of us.
Yeah.
Just take more of our money. So there you go. Some Republican was all ready to run off with that idea and build a career on it, and it turns out, no, that won't work either, because the people in the government are criminally insane. What we would need in the government would be people who honored God and his ideas about justice. Then that would work. So how do we get to the first part? I'm not sure. But maybe the catastrophe that these politicians are bringing down upon their own heads through their own maniacal obsession with rebelling against God, they're going to actually bring the house down upon their own heads. And then hopefully there will be people of common decency and just good common sense and just garden variety Christian values. Nothing spectacular. You don't have to be Charles Spurgeon or C.S. Lewis. You could just be an average Christian guy who just wants to honor God and live life. And you could take over the government when these people destroy themselves. So anyway, that's why you're listening, because I want you paying attention so that when it all comes down, man, that you'll be ready to pick up the pieces. All right. Now we go that was San Francisco. We go to New York from the Just a System file, where the one Manhattan resident was asked about, hey, what's going on at the CVS drugstore? And this Manhattan resident said, well, it looks like the third world. The shelves are empty. There's been almost 27,000 complaints of retail theft in Manhattan, the highest number ever recorded. That's from January to September. Cases against shoplifters in New York are rarely prosecuted because there's no more cash bail. So they've legalized shoplifting in New York, and they're going to put CVS drugs. CVS can't sell enough drugs to keep up with the shoplifting, which is pretty surprising. All right, now, we go from New York, where the third world is upon them. Oh, wait, one more thing. One New York City man was arrested 46 times in 1 year for shoplifting, and he's never been prosecuted. How do you get arrested 46 times? Okay, I'm not going to ask. Okay, let's just move on. New York is going to, if anyone could sink Manhattan into the Atlantic, it'll be the governing officials there in New York. So who was that politician who was worried about the island flipping, turning up on its side? I can't remember, but I'm worried about New York, that New York's actually going to, yeah. Okay, so into the widespread panic file, where the former CEO of Home Depot is warning us about, he says that the supply chain crisis is becoming a national emergency, at which point I want to tell the guy, hey, shut up. Don't be giving these politicians the idea that there's another emergency. That's the last thing we need. So this guy, this former CEO of Home Depot, he's the former CEO, and by the way, a former CEO of Chrysler. Why are we listening to this guy? He's lost two jobs as CEO, and now he's giving us advice? Bob Nardelli. I don't know much about the guy, but so far I'm not impressed. He says it's a national emergency, and he suggests there should be an emergency declaration from the government and that the military should get involved in delivering Christmas presents, apparently. Oh, yeah, right. Screw guns to Home Depot for Christmas, right? A socket set for Grandpa. We need the military? Really, Bob? I don't know about that. This guy must be somehow involved. I mean, obviously he's out of job. He's out of work right now. Maybe he's looking to get appointed as the military Christmas czar, in charge of making sure that we deliver the Christmas presents, the trinkets, and the screw guns and the socket sets for Christmas, so that the Americans can get the Christmas they deserve. All right, Bob, please sit down and shut up. Meanwhile, what's happening? What Bob doesn't realize, or maybe he does, I don't know. Out in Los Angeles, the ships are stacked up still, right? We've all seen the pictures. And you've got the container ships in line out there. And so the White House last week released a memo. And basically, Joe Biden said the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach are going to operate 24/7. That's what they said. And then that was it. Do they have the authority to do that? They do not. Do they have the means or the wherewithal to make that happen? They do not. Yet they've released a memo and everyone in the media says, well, the ports are operating 24/7 now. Well, guess what? They're not, because Joe Biden doesn't know how to do that. And the reason they weren't operating even 7, forget 24/7, they can't even get the port to operate 7 days a week, is because they don't have the labor. And Joe Biden releasing a memo doesn't change the facts on the ground at all. But he did it, and now I guess we all believe it. I personally don't believe it, that's all. I'll bet you if I were to visit either the ports of Long Beach or Los Angeles tomorrow, they would not be operating 24/7. That's just my guess. Joe Biden now says he plans to meet with business leaders, port leaders, and union leaders to discuss action. Yes, as if Joe Biden can make the trains run on time. Did you hear what I just said? Anyway, look that phrase up. Making the trains run on time. Just look that up, and then you'll understand my implication. So Joe Biden thinks that he can just say it, and it is. And here's what's scary about that, ladies and gentlemen, is the government is now volunteering to step in and help. They want to provide money, maybe military personnel, maybe they just want to help the ports because, you know, Joe's wants to save Christmas because he's Uncle Joe and he's such a kind-hearted guy. He's not the first Uncle Joe, by the way. Joe Biden's not the first kind-hearted Uncle Joe to extend a helping hand to the private sector. Joe Biden, he's going to make the trains run on time. Because everyone in the government has been told that they have these godlike powers. I mean, I think a lot of people in the government think they have the power to stop disease, to halt the transmission of viruses. They have the power. Halt the transmission of an aerosol respiratory virus. They believe it, and so they think they're God. And what's weird is that the people believe it. The vast majority of the people actually think that they have the power to stop the transmission of an aerosol respiratory virus and to magically make the ports run 24/7. That's what we need. That's happening. So this is the government, the communist coup leaders. So America's been taken. The government's been taken by a bunch of communists, headed by Barack Obama and George Soros. And they're going to take over the ports. And slowly but surely, they'll take over everything. And they'll break it first and make it so it needs to be fixed. And then they'll come in and fix it. And then it'll be a state operation. And they're not going to give it back. You know, back in the olden days when America was somewhat free, the government used to bail out the big businesses and then they used to give them back. Well, this time, Uncle Joe's going to take it, and Uncle Joe ain't giving it back. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. I got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the action. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you for sticking with us as we go and document the decline and fall and the inevitable rise again of Western Christendom. That's right. We're not going to just focus on the decline and fall all the time because we're all about preparing you to take over once the dust settles. Unfortunately, the dust has to get kicked up first, which is going to be relatively uncomfortable. But we've gotten through some pretty hard times before, and we'll make it through again. Because in Christ, we can do all things. That's right. And so, but be of good cheer and let not your heart be troubled. That's not Sean Hannity's line, by the way. I really hate that he uses that line. That's from the Gospel of John, and it was spoken by Jesus Christ himself. It's not a tagline for Sean Hannity's repugnant, repellent, pathetic show and career. All right. So speaking of repugnant and repellent, let's go to Janet Yellen, one of the most unpleasant persons to cast your eyes or your ears upon is Janet Yellen. To see her is disturbing, and then when she talks, it's even more so. Janet Yellen, and it's not just because, I'll just leave it at that, all right? Janet Yellen told the communist perverts at ABC News, who interviewed her, that she's convinced that the new global tax rate of 15% for big companies will be achieved. That's right. All these communists have gotten together all over the world. 136 countries have agreed to tax businesses, big ones only, big. Big businesses at 15%. Who gets the money? Well, they do, I guess, the people who've agreed. How do they get the money? Oh, they'll threaten to shoot you if you don't pay it. Well, no, first they'll threaten to fine you and then to prosecute you and then eventually to stand you up against a wall and shoot you in the head if you don't give them their money. 136 countries have set the minimum global tax rate at 15% for big companies. What's a big company? They'll decide. Who will decide? Well, the same people who will stand you up against the wall and blow your brains out, they're going to decide what big is. And big is going to be, do you have any? If you have any, we're going to take 15% of it because you're big. Biden says that this new global tax, 15%, it levels the playing field, is what he says. Yeah, it levels something, Joe. You're going to level something. So what does this mean, by the way? By the way, do you people know that businesses already pay an enormous amount of tax through their payroll tax? Do you know all those big rich people that everybody hates? They pay enormous quantities of income tax. Enormous criminal levels of taxation are being executed against anyone who's even modestly successful in business. They're basically being... Okay, I'll just leave it at that because I get upset. But anyway, they're taking an enormous amount of money from these people through payroll taxes, and now they want to take 15% of what? Like whatever's left? Just the profits? The gross revenue? What? Well, they'll decide. Who? The people with the guns will decide. So we go in there deeper into the Yellen file. Janet Yellen gets more and more disturbing. She agrees with Joe Biden's idea. And it's not Joe Biden, by the way. It's Barack Obama and George Soros, who actually run the government, along with several women from the Obama administration. And I think Obama's mom. I'm sorry, his mother-in-law. Barack Obama's mother-in-law is actually running the country right now. In fact, I think she's actually has a significant influence in governance throughout the world, is Barack Obama's mother-in-law. It'd be funny when we get to heaven and we find out what actually happened. Be like, did you realize that Obama's mother-in-law was in charge the whole time? It's like, man, I knew things were kind of out of control there, but I didn't know it was that bad. Well, it's that bad. Who else would want to look at every transaction of $600 or more? Who else would want to give the IRS the authority to look at that? I mean, it's got to be someone as dim-witted and inconsequential as Barack Obama's mother-in-law, because if it's not, if it's actually the people actually running the government, then that's scary. They want to keep track of every transaction of $600 or more. Why? Well, Janet Yellen was asked why by a communist empty skirt at CBS, Nora O'Donnell. I don't know who this is. I've heard the name before. I can just assume that if she works for CBS, that she's a leftist maniac, obsessed with sexual immorality and rebellion against the living God. That's Nora O'Donnell. That's just my assumption. I don't watch CBS. But Nora O'Donnell asked her, Yellen goes on to say, we want to close the tax gap. Yeah, there's a failure of individuals to report income that they've actually earned. They're cheating on the taxes. There's cheating going on. That's why we need this, Nora. And Nora O'Donnell asks, well, isn't that among billionaires? Is that really among people who are transferring $600? And then Janet Yellen doesn't answer the question. Well, she does. She says, no, it tends to be among high income individuals. And she goes on and on and on. Yellen actually gives an example to Nora O'Donnell. She says, if someone reports an income of $10,000 and they had $3 million go out of their checking account, that tells the IRS that's an individual that you might want to audit. She says to Nora O'Donnell in answer to her question. But then Nora O'Donnell doesn't follow up and say, well, if there's $3 million going out of their checking account, that's not $600. Yeah. That's $3 million. I was asking you about the $600. But Janet Yellen doesn't have to answer that. She gets by with that answer. Why? Well, it's frankly incomprehensible why. Only a populace so distracted by their own lusts and appetites that they're not paying attention, even as their rulers openly discuss their plunder and don't even try to hide it. It's only a populace that dim would not force Nora O'Donnell basically out of journalism for life for not following up on that. But Nora doesn't have to follow up on it. And Janet Yellen will go along and she'll say $3 million. But by the way, that we want to look at $600. Nobody says anything. Why? Because it's just incomprehensible. And it's very sad to see the decline and fall of Western civilization so rapid now. But you know what that means? That means that whatever's next is getting closer, and that's good. Whatever's next and whatever's going to replace what America has become, which is a corrupt criminal enterprise, unfortunately. That's what America has become, a corrupt, murderous criminal enterprise. It has to be replaced. And whatever's next is going to be better, and I'm going to make sure of that, and I invite you along. So let's go now into the criminal negligence file. I said criminal negligence, then I crossed it out because I didn't know what to call this. I think it's just criminal because it involves Anthony Fauci. Email correspondence between Fauci and his wife when they're talking about the fact that how many people died from the vaccine. 23 people in Norway died after being administered the Pfizer vaccine over there in Norway. And Fauci and his wife were emailing back and forth about that article. And Fauci's wife says, yikes, unquote. That's all she says about 23 people dying in Norway. Yikes. And then they go on to discuss how wonderful it is that Anthony Fauci has been immortalized with an action figure. I said an action figure. So does anyone else, an action figure, you know, like a toy for kids, an Anthony Fauci doll. You might call it an idol. That's what they would have called it back. Alexander the Coppersmith would have been hammering these things out back in Turkey, back in the day. But anyway, does anyone else find it odd that they both work in the government? Isn't that a problem? Anthony Fauci and his wife, she oversees bioethics for the U.S. government. And Fauci oversees doling out money to virology labs like the one in Wuhan. Did I say Wuhan? I meant Wuhan. That's not a problem? That's not, nobody else finds that unusual? Oh, we all find that unusual, but nobody says anything. Why? Is it the whole up against the wall and we'll shoot you in the head? Is that where we are? You can't criticize Anthony Fauci or you'll be figuratively stood up against the wall and your career will be executed at gunpoint. I don't know. Because you would think that there would be Republicans in the government who would at least bring up the fact that these two seem to be, But you know what is that this really gives this really exposes the truth that the loyal opposition, the idea of a loyal opposition, right? In America, there used to be the Democrats would win for a while, the Republicans would win, and then there was the loyal opposition. That's all gone now. There is no loyal opposition. We've basically been seized. The levers of power in the government has been seized by one party. And there's Republicans and Democrats in that party, and it's a criminal organization, basically. And there is no loyal opposition. That's why nobody's going to say anything about Anthony Fauci and his demented wife and their demented sick emails about the fact that Anthony Fauci is a modern day idol. And they think that's really cool. All right, now we go from there to the Leica suicide file, where the Pentagon's vaccine mandate is set to, it's set to go into full force. It's on a roll, and it's dividing the troops. In fact, a lot of people in the military are choosing to leave. A substantial number of the most elite, the Navy SEAL types, the fighter pilot types, well, they're all seeking exemptions right now. And if they don't get them, what happens? Where do all of our SEALs and our fighter pilots go? Well, they go out of the service. That's all. Let's see. The Daily Caller interviewed an active service member, spoke on condition of anonymity. You can imagine why, with the whole up against the wall thing. they say they're undergoing a pressure campaign over the vaccine. It's bad for morale. The Pentagon is mandating that everyone in the military be vaccinated by the end of the year. And there's a bunch of people in the military who are saying, no, thank you. And by the way, this is an all-volunteer military. Do you remember that? At least right now it is. And so they're going to leave. One lawyer, David Younts, representing dozens of troops, he said that if his clients don't get exemptions, they're not going to comply. And that means even if they have to leave the military, they will. He said he's got the vast majority of his clients are what he calls, quote, hard no's, unquote. That means they're not going to get the vaccine no matter what. They're just not going to do it. What are the consequences for refusing a lawful order to get vaccinated, which is what they're calling it? By the way, the military, I went in the military. They injected me with I don't know how many hundreds of different things. My arms hurt for 2 weeks. They injected me with every vaccine known to man. Some of them that probably unknown to anyone outside the military. So once you hand your body over to the military and you sign a contract, you're obligated to follow their lawful orders and take the drugs that have been approved by the government. Well, here's the thing. This particular vaccine has not been approved by the government in any sense of any other vaccine ever given to humans in the military. It's an experimental vaccine. And because there isn't an existential crisis, then the government does not have the authority even to tell the military that they have to take this experimental vaccine. And it's a volunteer military, so they have the right to voluntarily leave. But maybe not. Maybe the military is going to throw these guys in jail. Nobody really knows because we've never done this before. This is all an insane mania that's been sustained and amplified by a bunch of cowardly children who've somehow found themselves in charge of the government and even the military. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I'm not quite done with this vaccine and the military mandate thing. Basically, the military members, if they get an accommodation, let's say they get a religious exemption, they get some accommodation where they don't have to take the vaccine. They're being told that they will be undeployable. They're going to be basically chained to a desk and said, you're no longer a sniper. You're no longer a pilot. You're no longer a SEAL. Because you won't get the vaccine. And once you're undeployable, that means essentially your military career is over. Because you cannot advance in rank without deployment. It simply doesn't work. One former SEAL says that the vaccine mandate is a kind of final straw. He says a lot of these guys, this purge has been going on for years. We've been fighting against the... basically the feminization and now the homosexualization and the transgenderization of the military. And a lot of these just normal men, they're leaving now. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back. They're done. It's not just the vaccine. It's the social experimentation that's been going on for the better part of 30 years now in the military. All right. From there we go to, I didn't even know what to call this. This is Beyond Delusion. This is straight into the Twilight Zone, where a federal judge ruled in a plaintiff's case against Michigan State University. Michigan State University wanted employee Gina Norris to get the vaccine no matter what. Well, Gina Norris filed a lawsuit on the basis that she'd already contracted COVID-19, had recovered, and she prevented evidence that she had active antibodies against COVID-19. And she presented evidence that her doctor told her she didn't need to get the vaccine because she had natural immunity. So this is a doctor and a clinically accurate medical test. It goes into court. Normally that would be considered good. That's pretty compelling evidence. By the way, the employee, Gina Norris, she faces termination from the university if she doesn't get the vaccine, if she doesn't comply with the mandate. So what does the U.S. District Judge do? U.S. District Judge Paul Maloney, appointed by George W. Bush, declined her lawsuit and basically said that natural immunity and the testimony of her doctors doesn't mean anything. He pointed to a 1905 Supreme Court ruling that says that in an emergency, the government can mandate vaccines. He calls it a binding precedent. That ties his hand. I can't do anything. My hands are tied. There's a binding precedent, you know. And so basically the judge says natural immunity doesn't matter. The testimony of a doctor doesn't matter. What matters is a binding precedent from 1905 surrounding an emergency that doesn't exist. So it's the Twilight Zone. So there's no justice anymore. There's no loyal opposition. There's no such thing as credible evidence anymore. You can't present credible evidence to someone who's actively in a mania and can't recognize reality or truth or right and wrong. They're just in a sustained state of terrified, hysterical mania. And that's the majority of the people in the justice system, in the media, in the government, and in the educational bureaucracy, most of them are experiencing a sustained mania from which they cannot snap out. And they'll just keep doing this as long as we tolerate it. And I'm not sure how we get out from underneath it. I mean, once we gave the Supreme Court the authority to murder innocent people, which we did in 1973, we said the Supreme Court has the right to legalize the murder of innocent children. Once we handed that to them, it was just a matter of time before we lost it all. And that's what we're in the midst of right now. This is the rest of the sand. If you've ever stood in the sand as the tide comes in, right? And then you feel the water come up to your ankles, right? And up to your knees, and it's uncomfortable. That was the legalization of child killing. Now the undertow is sucking back out and all the sand is coming out from underneath your feet. And you're going to be sucked down and pulled down into the center of the earth by the force of it. So a judge overrules immunity and the testimony of a doctor based on. So this is the definition of the end of the world. So from there, let's go on, though, because there are other things. We've got the big dumb war file where the Pentagon has quite quietly offered condolence payments to the family of all the civilians they blew up in Afghanistan. Remember just before the American troops left and we allowed Kabul to collapse into the hands of the Taliban? Remember just before that, Joe Biden came on and said, we just struck ISIS-K and we blew up a bomber was on his way. But thanks to Joe Biden, we swept in and we bombed them. We droned them, right? Well, now the Pentagon's offering to pay all the civilians they killed in that drone strike. And they say they're working with the State Department and family members to help anyone interested in relocating to the United States. The U.S. military has also apologized for what the Pentagon is officially calling, quite quietly, though, a tragic mistake. A tragic mistake. They're apologizing. They're offering money. They're offering to relocate the other family members to the United States. Yet no leaders, not a single leader, in the regime of traitors who've seized the government, have publicly acknowledged that Joe Biden lied. And everyone in the media and everyone around him and everyone to this day continues to lie about the fact that we drone struck an ISIS bomber. And the press is mostly silent. And where did I get this? From Newsmax. That's considered an alternative right-wing news source. The NBC and CBS and ABC and CNN and all the rest, they're not going to announce that the government's actually apologized and admit that we bombed an innocent family and killed them, killed a bunch of children. They're not going to do that. The press is mostly silent, and all the traitors in power, they just go on. And Joe Biden's statement about bombing the ISIS-K bomber, that's going to be allowed to stand, as if it's historically accurate. It's insane. People should be arrested for this, because there's a difference between a mistake and friendly fire and collateral damage. There's a difference between that and what they just did. They staged a bombing, killed the wrong people, lied about it, and what? Nothing. Joe Biden gets an extra scoop of ice cream, I think, is the only consequence. And there is a lieutenant colonel, though, who has been thrown in jail and will be summarily drummed out of the military for all of this. And somehow history will probably blame Lieutenant Colonel Scheller for blowing up this Afghanistanian family and the kids. But speaking of that, well, let's go to the Religion of Peace file, where a 37-year-old Danish citizen, I think they identified the guy. Do they have his name here? I thought I had his name. It's Ali bin Ali Baba bin Ali. No, that's a different one. Sorry. There's two of them. In fact, let's do this. So this guy, a 37-year-old Danish citizen who the leftist press has assiduously not named yet, at least as at the time I went to air with this. They have acknowledged he was a convert to Islam. He picked up a bow and arrow and he shot and killed five people with a bow and arrow in Norway. Killed four women and one man with a bow and arrow. The accused bow and arrow assailant has been convicted several times before. He's a Danish citizen who's lived in Norway his whole life. He's not been working since the early 2000s, according to government officials, and he was well known as an Islamist threat. His family suspects that he's mentally ill. Isn't that convenient? The family always suspect. You know, mentally ill, I'm kind of, this word's been thrown around, and we now accredit bad behavior, cowardly behavior, criminal behavior with mental illness, and it's different. There's a difference between mental illness and being bad. There's a difference between being mentally ill and being evil. This guy is evil. May he be mentally ill? I think that's beside the point at this point, because he shot and killed five people with a bow and arrow. I'm sure legislators in Norway are drawing up bow and arrow control right now so that bows and arrows will be more strictly regulated. The man, the Islamic terrorist in Norway with the bow and arrow, has been charged with murder, for whatever that's worth, in an EU country. I don't think that means much. I think that means he might not get a new prayer rug issued to him from the government next year. He'll have to buy his own. I think that's the penalty for Islamic killings in the EU. Deeper into the Religion of Peace file, this is in the subfolder called Jihad. That's a subfolder of the Religion of Peace, because the Religion of Peace is perpetually making war on everyone. David Ames, a member of parliament, I think they're called, over in England, was butchered in a Methodist church by Ali Harbi Ali. David Ames was a right-wing minister of parliament who had advocated on behalf of the Iranian people against the Islamic criminal gang that runs Iran. He had publicly come to the defense of Christianity against Islam on many occasions, and he was well known as an ardent defender of Western civilization against Islamicization. He was butchered in a church by a Muslim terrorist. The crime was assessed as being linked to a jihadist ideology. Why? Because of statements that the suspect himself made to police after he was arrested. He basically said, "I killed him because he's against Islam and I'm a warrior for Allah." He made statements to that effect, and so the police, you didn't have to be Sherlock Holmes to put the, to connect the dots. And so from there, from the widespread, we go from England back to the United States to South Dakota, where everybody's favorite Republican governor, Kristi Noem, who didn't officially lock down South Dakota, but as I've been able to do some research, she did encourage everyone to be scared and terrified and hide and stay home. She did do that. So the only thing she didn't do was issue official orders locking anyone down. She did go along with the hysterical, panicked, terrified response to a potential crisis that basically destroyed whatever was left of Western civilization. She did go along with all that. And now she's encouraging people to celebrate Native Americans Day. Native Americans Day is October 11th. I know that's supposed to have been Columbus Day too, but it's Native Americans Day. And I want everyone to... The second Monday in October has been recognized as a federal holiday since 1968. I'm not going to mention that it was Columbus Day because I'm going to call it Native Americans Day, because in South Dakota, we recognize Native Americans Day. It is my goal to come to the table with tribal leaders to support tribal communities and businesses and families. Unquote. That's Kristi Noem volunteering to give even more of a welfare to the Indian nations, the welfare that has destroyed their families and destroyed their lives for the better part of 150 years. Kristi's got more for them because she's a Republican. We recognize the shared values that we all have as South Dakotans, says Kristi. That's, by the way, Kristi, that's what Columbus Day did. In case you hadn't noticed, Columbus Day was a way to bring together the Irish and the Germans and the English and the Italians and the Indians, both kinds, to bring them all together to celebrate the establishment of Christian civilization in North America. That's what Columbus Day was for. It was so that the Dakota tribe and the Lakota tribe could stop warring with the Chippewa tribe. Just like the Irish and the English and the Italians and the Germans would no longer feel this undercurrent sense of wanting to make war upon each other, because we could all celebrate and we could gather together under the umbrella of Christian civilization. Columbus Day took away that division that we may or may not have felt against each other as Irishmen, as Englishmen, as Germans, as Italian, as Indians, as Chippewa, as Dakota, as Lakota, all of the different tribes of the world who have made war upon each other since time immemorial, could gather under now the umbrella of Christian liberty. And Columbus, Christopher Columbus, was a symbol of that. I don't even want to get into who he was or what he did or any of that. It was a symbolic holiday to bring us together. But the anti-Christian left wants to divide us. So there's a malevolent force of Antichrist moving actively against us. We know that. But that malevolent force is being helped by the useful idiots like Christy Noem, who thinks that Native Americans Day is wonderful. It's not wonderful to replace a symbol of Christian liberty with a divisive idea on the same day, Christy. They did it on the same day for a reason. It was to stick their thumb in your eye. But you are too shallow to even understand that the thumb was being stuck in your eye, and that all of the Native Americans you claim to love so much have been being destroyed by the communist left, who you basically bent the knee to, and it's just shameful and embarrassing. And I guess that qualifies you to be a Republican, because that seems to be what being a Republican is. And that's why I am not one. No, but I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life, and my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, I and my extremely attractive audio engineer, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.